Hey, drama listeners. This is just a quick message from me, Dylan, before we jump into today's episode with original Wicked Broadway cast member Chris Fitzgerald, which, if you don't know, he was the original Bach in the musical, but has done a bazillion other Broadway shows, including Waitress and Finian's Rainbow. He's going to be in Spamalot. He was in Young Frankenstein. I mean, the list goes on and on. And we are so lucky to have had the chance to chat with him today. We're continuing our celebration of Wicked at 20 years, which has been such a surreal and magical time for us. And if you want to help support the podcast as we're about to head into our fourth year, we would love if you became a supporter on our Patreon. All the information is in the notes below, where you'll get bonus episodes, join our Instagram close friends, and have the eternal love and devotion of Connor and I. It would really mean a lot if you would consider giving $5 a month to help us keep the podcast rolling as we head into this next year. All right, let's get on with the show and enjoy Chris Fitzgerald.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. Connor, we're smack dab in the middle of our Wicked series that we're doing this month to commemorate two decades of the smash Broadway musical that you and I both love so much. And, you know, we've gotten our hands on some iconic guests, and the word iconic is thrown around a lot.
It is tossed around a lot these days, but this is an icon.
Yeah, this guest has not lost their luster by any means, because this is someone who has, you know, made rare podcast appearances over the years, but many Broadway appearances.
You know, we knew we could get the exclusive here, so we're getting in. You know, although I first knew about him in Wicked, I did see him in Waitress probably half a dozen times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is a lot of times to go see a show and spend money.
Yeah,
to be honest, they're probably too many. Should I be admitting that publicly?
No, yeah, for sure. We were supporting the arts.
Well, you had to go back and see, you know, the different women playing Jenna.
But you could always count on Drew Gehling.
Oh,
our
yeah.
guest today being there, holding down the fort, like the strong men protecting the house while the women were away.
Oh my God. While the women were away. Right. All right, Dylan, I'm going to just jump in.
Yes,
I'm so excited.
Thrilling.
We were teeing him up, but I'm going to tell you that our guest today is a Broadway mainstay, a three-time Tony Award nominee, four-time Drama Desk Award winner, has an Outer Critics Circle Award, amongst many more nominations under his belt. It's hard to say what he's best known for, as he has cemented himself on Broadway as a standout, playing Bach in Wicked, Ogie in Waitress, Igor in Young Frankenstein, and Og in Finian's Rainbow. His ability to transform time and time again has led to appearances in the latest Company revival as David, Chicago as both Billy Flynn and Amos Hart, and Act of God, The Merchant of Venice, Amour, Barnum, Gutenberg the Musical, Saturday Night, Minsky's, Fully Committed, Corpus Christi, The Cripple of Inishman, and so many more plays, musicals, and readings. You will recognize our guest from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Godless, Happy, The Good Wife, Twins, Revolutionary Road, Let Them All Talk, Girl Most Likely, and more. This year, you can see him back on Broadway, this time as Patsy in the revival of Spamalot the Musical. Please welcome to Drama,
Christopher Fitzgerald.
Hello. You guys have when you started with your drama, there was a dissonant kind of harmonic thing going. And then on my name, you also repeated that exact harmonic.
Wow.
Do you guys practice that? Is that something that is just natural, that's like one of your gifts?
It's just one of our party tricks.
And when I say gifts, I mean like the thing that you text somebody. No,
I'm glad that you call it a gif and not a gif, but that would be a problem. But
gif versus gif is the og versus og of 2023.
There you go. It's exactly it, because I tried to tell you that it was og or og. I don't know. We settled on og. But it could be Og.
Wow, that was a conversation that happened.
Yeah, that was a conversation that happened. You're right. And
Oh my God.
I can't remember who made the final determination, but It might have been like Kate Baldwin or something.
I feel like she just put her foot down. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's just Og. Just have it be that.
I watched that video of them singing Old Devil Moon on Broadway.com or wherever it was a million times in my youth.
Oh my God. That was so special.
What a tune.
Every single tune in that show is just like a total banger. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And was that an encore to Broadway thing?
It was an encore to Broadway thing.
Okay.
Yes, but I wasn't involved in it when it was at encores. I was doing something else. I don't remember what.
Probably, you know, we probably listed it off in this resume. I mean, you've done a lot. Can we call you Chris, maybe, by the way? Or do you prefer Christopher?
Sure. Chris is fine.
Okay.
Chris, thank you for complimenting our harmonic unison.
Chris! Drama!
There you go. Really,
it was wild.
You're warm.
I wanted to add a third almost. I was just going to come in and add a third, but...
You know, when we end the show, we also say drama, and you can join us all on right. that one.
Maybe I'll join
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, we always like to check in with our guests. Are you well?
I am well. I'm doing very well. My wife, Jessica Stone, is a director, and she directed Kimberly Kimbo last year, and she's also working right now on Water for Elephants.
Yes.
Which is going to be beginning rehearsals in January, I think. But I have two boys, Emmett, who is a freshman at LaGuardia High School, and my son, Charlie, who is a junior at Millennium High School here in Brooklyn. And I'm about to start Spamalot. So basically, everything's fine, but it's rich.
Uh-huh.
It's a rich time for the family. Like, everyone's got a lot going on. I kind of liken it to like being, and everything's good. Like, it's a lot of beautiful bounty, but it's a little bit like when someone gives you like, a huge giant piece of chocolate cake, and I love chocolate cake, and you're like, oh my God, I can't get enough of this chocolate cake. And then suddenly you're like, my tummy's hurting a little bit, like, I think I'm done with the chocolate cake. And they're like, no, eat more, have some more. And you're like, oh, I love it so much, but boy, it's just very rich, it's very dense, and it's delicious, and I love it, but oh, I don't know if my body can process it. But that's how I'm doing right now.
You're that young boy from Matilda who's eating the cake, right?
You're right. I'm exactly, mm-hmm. That's who I am.
I am a huge fan of your wife. She's a star. And I'm so excited for the both of you that you're going to have such a thrilling season on Broadway, and your shows won't be competing. So that's good.
Yeah, I know. It's so far, it's going to be a really exciting season of variety of stuff. It's like, I don't know the last time I have heard of so many new shows opening, especially musicals.
Yeah.
And so I'm thrilled, you know, and I just hope it ignites a kind of continued just pull to Midtown and have it just be an exciting place for people to keep coming.
Totally.
To.
For sure.
Because boy, we need it. We need it.
I know. It feels like, oh, Broadway's back. But like, it's not back to what it was before the pandemic. You know what I mean? So it's, there still needs to be like a continuous stream of income to the arts in
yeah,
general.
Yeah. I think we all lost a little bit of the habit of going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, legitimately. And so when you kind of stop that particular behavior, kind of, you know, if we lose 10% of those who came before, we're, you know, it's a crisis.
Yeah.
In terms of like how we can afford to do larger shows with larger casts and big budgets and do exciting and take big swings at things. So yeah, it's just getting people back into the habit and getting it so that it's something that people just do. It's just a part of their fabric of their lives. Like, we got to go see a show because it's thrilling. It's that immediate, you know?
Yeah.
I'm happy that you've been steadily working those, even because Waitress was one of the first shows to come back. 2 years ago, was it?
It was. Okay. I mean, I think it was the first musical back.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it was a very thrilling and very heady emotional time for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to even remember. If I place myself back there, I'm like, whoa, I forget how intense that was,
mm-hmm.
to be back in the room with everyone and to hear people singing together, making stuff again was really like overwhelming almost. And then Company came Company came right on the heels of that as well.
So you just did like 2 months of Waitress or like a little while?
I think that's what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Were you in Company pre-COVID?
I was, yes.
Okay. Look at you doing double duty there. I love that.
Yes. That was, that was a nice, like unexpected thing. I mean, we were all kind of, the group of Company was gearing up for rehearsals and getting ready. And then I got a call about Waitress that they were going to try to just kind of squeeze it in there. And so we made it work, but it was definitely my first day at Company. We arrive, we're like all sitting there. We come into the room. There's Addy, there's Katrina. We've got the whole gang. It's just so exciting. And the COVID person came in and was like, Chris, you have tested positive for COVID and you need to leave. And I had to literally just stand up and walk out and then go retest. And then it turns out I was negative at that point, but it was that was also the moment where everybody was just like so heightened and stressed that I was like in a room with them singing, you know, sorry, grateful.
Sorry, grateful. Right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I feel like I have so many questions about so many of your credits. I think I want to start and go way back to the beginning. When you figured out that you were interested in the arts, and then we can jump forward from there.
Okay.
We call it Ring of Keys on this show because we like to think of it as that moment of recognition when you saw something or you were consuming something and you realized you needed the arts to be a part of your life. Do you feel like you had that experience as a kid or a little older or at any point really?
I think I've had lots of keys moments that have just kind of guided my way. I mean, I grew up in Maine, in Portland, Maine, and I was very fascinated by, on Sunday mornings, you had all the shows from the 1950s, the reruns, Abbott and Costello, your show of shows, Jackie Gleason, Comedy Hour. And this is one of my earliest memories is like sitting there watching this material and just being really, just finding it fascinating and hilarious. And then I guess the first moment was I got into like a clown class. I think my mom put me in some kind of clown class when I was five because I was just such a, you know, so nutty and so out of control. And she was trying to figure out ways to kind of exercise whatever this thing that this little tiny bean of a crazy person was exercising. And so I remember that. I remember then I auditioned for Oliver when I was eight at the local community theater, and I was really scared to audition. I just remember somebody finally just coming, like holding my hand and being like, come on, you can just give it a try. And then I was like, oh, I'll give it a try. Where is it? Like, and then I was just like launching. I was like, yep, this is feeling good. I don't know, man. I just did a lot of different things. I did new vaudeville stuff. So like storytelling and juggling and physical comedy stuff. And then I sang in an a cappella group for a while in high school. Like that was my high school job, was to go around and sing on the street and try to make money and sing at festivals in the summer in Maine. And then I went to college and did more kind of musical theater performance stuff. And then I went to grad school and got kind of into acting, you know, and like kind of like revealing myself and getting in touch with that kind of stuff. And I had so many moments that were just like, let me try this, or this might be interesting. I'll try that. So there's lots of those moments, very varied, you know, and really odd.
You know, but as you're talking about this, you're like, clown school, new vaudeville, all these different experiences. I've seen you play them out on stage. I feel like you're such a rounded performer. You've lived an artistic life here, Chris.
Well, so that's my little grab bag of stuff. You know, it's the stuff that just jazzes me, you know, and the stuff that just like still to this day is that like kind of thread all the way back to like watching Jackie Gleason just do something silly with his body and just kind of being jazzed by that. And so that stuff still, you know, but then it's layers of other things, you know, it's then layers of grad school training and kind of classical stuff. And then layers of just like singing, but not in musical theater, but like singing with my little a cappella group because I loved to sing. And there was nobody like telling me to sing. There was no, you know, system. We just did it because we just like thought it was cool and we enjoyed it. And we enjoyed it.
And your parents encouraged it.
Yes, they did. My mom definitely did, encouraged all of it. But, you know, really like, what's she gonna do? Like, this was like, I was... I was on my way You know, if she was like, I think I'd rather you not sing, I would be like, well, let me tell you something, mama. I don't know. It's a terrible joke. I'm sorry.
Then when you went that Oliver audition, though, like, you knew you could sing, or you at least enjoyed it. Like,
I guess.
Like, what led to that? You know what I mean? Like, did you just hear about this audition, or was it somebody from clown class? Or?
Well, this particular theater was... So my parents divorced when I was very young. My dad was a B-52 pilot in Vietnam, and he came back from the war, and my parents split, but they lived relatively close. And my dad worked at this theater a lot, did a lot of, played Will Parker in Oklahoma and did a bunch of stuff. It was McMurphy and Cuckoo's Nest. And so I was around the space when I was very young, watching from the light booth and just kind of soaking in that whole experience. And I just thought it was marvelous, a marvelous place. So while that was happening, you know, my mom was here doing clown class and like kind of trying to figure out other ways to kind of really keep me stimulated. And so that's kind of where, I don't know, it's like I watched people sing. I started to want to sing myself. I think I started lessons at some point, just, and then it all just kind of came together in that one faithful audition for Oliver, which I then played the, like just one of the Fagin's boys, right? And I had a little bowler hat. And I just remember I was like, during performances, I was so cheeky, like blinking at the audience and like doing little sly looks and little head shakes and nods. And the guy playing Fagin one night, like after the show, grabbed me by the scruff and was like, when I'm talking, you don't move. You understand me? And I was like, sorry. And then in my mind, I'm like, yeah, we'll see about that. Like,
that's so cute. I love
just that. A cheeky little bitch. I was just like, I'm not, you're not gonna stop this madness. It felt too good, I guess.
For sure. And I'm sure that people, you could see people reacting to you as well.
I think that's kind of where the little, just that little like, oh, this feels good kind of thing.
I read that you like learned the difference between like performing and acting once you got to college.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
I do. I think all through high school and in the college, I was kind of like acting was performing in a way. Mm-hmm. It was like showing something. It was presenting my silliness or my energy. And in college, I began to kind of understand the other side of it, and that became another journey of just like how I developed, I feel like.
Sure. Do you remember what the first Broadway show you saw was?
I think it might have been a tour of Les Mis.
Okay.
I had one of those great moments where my mom came down to my bedroom. I think I was like a freshman in high school, and she I lived in the basement. I was living in the basement. And she kind of came down and sauntered down and had this double cassette tape of Les Mis and was just like, oh, here, I had this thing. You might find it interesting. I don't know. And I just remember like popping it in and just kind of, this is okay. Like, not quite sure what's going. And then I just could never stop listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just was like, and then we went to Boston to see the tour of it. And I think that was like my first like, holy shit, this is like so exciting. But it's interesting. I never had a dream of being on Broadway. I never had this like kind of vision of like, someday I'm going to be up there in lights. It's just that never was my, I don't know. It's so interesting to talk about it or think about it. I just never had like a clear vision. I just know I followed things that tickled me or jazzed me. That was the thing. So if it was like a new thing, that I was going to follow that for a while. And I guess it just has led me here in some ways.
On this podcast.
Yeah. And now here talking to drama. If I could loop it, I would do just a little dissonance.
Uh-huh. Well, what was your New York stage debut?
Like off Broadway or off Broadway or Broadway or whatever.
Yeah,
my first credit was, so I had been working at the Williamstown Theater Festival at that point when I moved here for a couple of summers. And so I'd met a lot of people that are still dear friends of mine and people that I still collaborate with to this day. And so I came to the city and some of my friends from NYU grad school were working with a clown teacher named Chris Bays, who still teaches. He's an amazing director, amazing clown teacher and clown himself. And he directed this show called Zee Beldone. So it was all mask clown work that we were doing. And I just kind of hopped in and just did it and did it for a couple of nights. And that was like my first credit. And I just was, it was so exciting because all these like NYU kind of cool cats were doing it. So that was my first real New York credit.
So fun. Well, I mentioned earlier that the first time I was familiar with you was Wicked. And I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but you know, we're celebrating 20 years on Broadway with Wicked. I would love to chat with you a little bit about what you remember about the experience. When did you first get involved with the show?
I believe that I had done a play with Joe Mantello at Manhattan Theater Club called Corpus Christi. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Oh, yes. That was a controversial piece, wasn't it?
I mean, hugely. It's actually a really fascinating story, maybe for another podcast. But, it's actually like an amazing, it was an amazing experience where a play had such an effect on the community. It had such a polarizing thing that happened. You know, our opening night, 5,000 people were protesting the play on 55th Street, right outside the theater. 5,000 people. And then there was a counter protest on one street over that I think we had maybe 500 or so. So we had to walk through all these people. We had security guards watching the audience watch the play. And it was all because Terrence McNally wrote this play about a Jesus-like figure in his hometown of Corpus Christi, Texas. And kind of retold that story through his lens. And it just really, really got people upset and engaged and on both sides, you know, people kind of demanding that we have, when we tell stories, we have the right to tell stories. You have the right to not buy a ticket. And at the same time, religious leaders were like, you are blaspheming, you know, what we hold so dear. And it was just a really, you know,
because there were gay themes, right? Like the apostles were gay, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and then, but none of them had read the play, of course. They had just heard, you know, it's like Jesus has sex with all of his disciples. And, you know, there's all this blasphemous stuff. I was like, that, first of all, that wasn't the case. But even if it was, I mean, that's the play. But it wasn't. It was much more, it was Terrence McNally. It was smart. It was interesting. It was funny. And it was careful, like the guy, you know. So anyway, it was,
I'm sure,
really, that was really intense. And an amazing cast, Jeremy Sheamus, Michael C. Hall, Josh Lucas, Anson Mount, crazy.
Wow, how long did that show run for? Did it, was it an open-ended?
Nope, it was a part of their subscription, a couple months.
So you knew Joe Mantello through that?
So I knew Joe Mantello through that. I think they asked me to do Wicked out of town, and I couldn't do it because I was in another project at the time, I think. And so when it came in, they were making some cast changes, and they asked me to be a part of it on Broadway, which was very exciting. But I was getting married the weekend before we started rehearsals. And Joe and my wife are still to this day are like very, very close friends. And so he was at our wedding. And we were like, we have this honeymoon that we're doing. And Joe Mantello let us go on like a 10-day honeymoon.
That's amazing.
And I missed the first like week and a half, almost 2 weeks of rehearsal of Wicked. Isn't that crazy?
What a good
That's
guy.
Really nice.
It was incredible. I can't even believe how cheeky it was that we asked.
Yeah, right? That's kind of gutsy, Chris.
And Joe is no, you know, he's not easy. Like, you know, He'll say what he feels. But
is that in life and in directing style?
Of course, yes, in both.
Yeah. Okay. So then you get back from your fabulous honeymoon,
and
you're in the wonderful world of Wicked.
And I walk in, and it's like already grooving and already happening. And I don't know. I just remember. Here's some just memories.
Yeah.
I remember like watching Kristen do Popular for the first time. And just being like totally in awe of like her timing, her clarity, her commitment to the truth of, even though it was very silly and fun, it was like it always had her kind of like clarion, like detailed truth. I just remember Idina just blowing the roof off the place. It was one of those where once I kind of joined in, I was like, wow, this is really special. And people are very, very special in this. And then I was like, Nessa, I've got something to. I was like, no, I'm not doing like, you know, my stuff's a little, you know, it's like, I don't have a lot to do, but I was going to be determined to kind of have a good time and to try to make it make some kind of sense. But
and pivotal to the Wizard of Oz tie-in, yeah, not true. To spoil the show too much, you know, but.
Absolutely. Very, very pivotal. And just so cool how it was also just constructed, this idea of a prequel to something that we all know so well and all those details. I mean, it was kind of the first of its kind in a way.
Yeah, for sure.
And I really remember on the opening night, or no, our first preview. I don't even know if it was our dress, but I think our first preview, being off stage left with I had to wear like a thing over my costume in the opening number when we all run out and we're like, and she's like,
nice to see you,
or whatever. And we're like, we're looking up. They turned like a bed comforter into like some kind of robe I could throw over. So I was wearing like a giant comforter going out and looking up. But right before we enter, those first chords, bum, 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 bum. And the response from the audience was so deafening. I just remember feeling like the theater was shaking. And I'm not kidding. In that moment, I was like, this is going to be something very different. And it's going to last forever. And it has.
Yeah, here we are still talking about it.
Wow.
And like some dude standing in that same spot, like tonight, just like with his bed, with that bed comforter on, getting ready to walk out there and look up.
Yeah.
So funny. So funny.
And so this was all at the Gershwin. So they had done a San Francisco tryout. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true.
Do you know anything about the development of Bach in the musical? Like, was there ever any more music for him to sing or any other like story points that were focusing on him?
No, not really. He was always like kind of as crafted. I mean, at one point, Joe was like, if you want to try to like write a few funny things, like write them and bring them in. Maybe we'll pitch them to Winnie and see if she likes it. So I like had rewritten the first scene. This is an exclusive. You're getting an exclusive right now. No one else has heard this. But it was something, it was so dumb. But it was like, I had this idea of like, what if I entered with a giant gumball? And I was like, hey, Glinda, me and the fellas at the Gumdrop Gang, instead of the Lollipop Guild, me and the fellas at the Gumdrop Gang wanted to welcome you back to school with this giant gumdrop gift. If you press that button, it plays some traditional munchkin music. And she's like, oh, thank you, Bic. I'm like, yeah, you're welcome. It's Bach, but here, press that button. And then she was going to press the button. It was going to play some music. And I was going to do the little like munchkin dance that they do with their little like. So that was like one little dumb idea I had. And then I was going to be like.
And Winnie said no.
And then she said no. You know, no, these were terrible ideas. I'm not saying they're good. I'm just remembering them right now. Uh-huh. The other one was like, hey, Glinda, it's Bach. She's like, oh, hi, Bic. I'm like, yeah, remember like you and I threw up on you in science class. Remember we were dissecting the Flugel Snoogle or whatever, like making up some. We were in Sweeney Oz together. Remember? I played the flagon horn and you were the star, but the music munchkin, remember? So dumb. I'm sorry.
That's so cute.
I love that. I love that.
I especially love you trying to tie in the munchkin dance too. That's really fun.
There it is. I wanted to do something physical, something really silly to like announce the physicalness of like that.
Yeah.
But they said no. But now you can just imagine it in your mind.
Totally.
About what that would be.
What do you remember about working with Michelle?
We just had a ball. We just laughed all the time. We just like, we also were kind of, you know, we were second bananas to all the big bananas. And it was fun to just, we had a lot of sly observations about all the nuttiness going on. I mean, I've been in a lot of new shows and it's just, it's an impossible thing to try to pull off. And so when you're in the middle of it, tempers run hot, people get stressed out, people feel very vulnerable. And it was just like, this was so big. It was so much to kind of craft together that I think we just kind of held on to each other. And we were like, let's just like, you know, watch this. And then of course I watched her fall in love with Norbert, which was adorable. And And then it went on from there. But yeah, we were really good pals and we had a good time just like watching it all happen. And then, you know, nailing our own little spot, you know, nailing our,
of course,
our moments, if you will.
Any bitterness on your end that your other song isn't on the cast album, The Wicked Witch of the East, the two of you get that duet. Well, there's like, it's sort of a broken up song. You know, it's like different little, they didn't include it.
No, they didn't include it, but that's okay. I'm really okay with it.
You're okay with
it. And in fact, I haven't thought about it until you just mentioned it right now.
Sorry to dig up trauma.
Here's an interesting thing. I've never seen it. And I think we're going to go for the 20th anniversary and go see it. But I've never actually sat in the audience and watched the show.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Everyone I talk to who sees it recently or in the last 20 years, one thing that is very clear is that it has been maintained beautifully. And that's a variety of people that have made sure that happened. Mm-hmm. Lisa Leguio and Joe and David and all the players. But like, it's every time people go, they're just like, it's just still, it still works. It still bangs. It's still like a great evening. And a great spectacle, which I just think is really important, you know, and totally. Cool.
That's special. I mean, you mentioned your one son goes to LaGuardia. So has he ever seen it? Is he a theater kid?
He's not. He's music. He does instrumental music. Yeah.
Okay. No, I wasn't sure.
Neither kid. I mean, they love to go to opening nights.
Okay.
They had a great time at Kimberly. Oh my God. It was hilarious. Richard Ridge thought, my wife came out at one point and there was another kid standing there. And like, do you guys know who Richard Ridge is?
Mm-hmm, yeah, from Broadway World.
Yeah.
Yes. So she comes out and she was like, oh, there's Charlie. And she was walking up to Charlie, but it was another kid. And the only person who knew that it wasn't Charlie's back was to her was Richard Ridge. And right as she got there, the kid turned and she was like, oh. She kind of recoiled and turned. And there was Richard. And he goes, that's not your son. That's not your son.
That's no. So him. Oh, that's I am so obsessed funny. With that. I was going to say, do you know if your kids have any favorite roles of yours over the years?
I don't know. I think growing up here in this household, they're very supportive. They're really cool. But it's just, I don't know. They just are kind of like, yeah, this is what mom and dad do. It's not really, I don't know. I think they're just pretty present for what's happening.
Yeah. Okay, listen, you've had a lot of credits, a lot of amazing things that you've done. We've gotten to touch on a few of them. If you wouldn't mind just indulging us, if we just list off a show, and if you share with us a memory or just a general reaction to your experience of being in that show before we...
Oh, man.
I know.
All right.
Okay.
So I'm ready.
I'm curious about Young Frankenstein.
Oh, man. Just insane cast. Like, everybody was just so funny and so bananas. Working with Mel Brooks was just so such a dream and enormous, enormous show. Mm-hmm. My son was born 2 weeks into rehearsals.
Oh,
that was a lot. Again, that was a big chocolate cake moment. It was like, wow, I'm doing this big part in this show and this is a big moment. And I have, you know, this brand new human being that is so wonderful at home. So it was like, it was a lot going on. But oh man, it was so fun. It just got more and more fun as we loosened up into it. Especially Roger and I, we just misbehaved a lot, which was really fun.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
All right. What about Chicago?
I had such a good time doing that show. The kind of professionalism of those dancers and the commitment that they have to that story. And again, it was like, you walk out there and that band starts to play those horns and that score and you just are, you're just right there. It was a really cool opportunity to both play Amos and Billy Flynn. I mean, I never pictured myself ever playing a part like Billy Flynn.
Which did you do first?
Amos.
Okay.
Yeah. And at one point I was at some opening night for something and Barry Weisler saw him and he was like, hey, I was thinking about you. I think you should come in and play Billy Flynn. And I was like, what? Minnie Flynn? That seems crazy. And he was like, no, you can do it like Flynn. A Jimmy Cagney type of guy, you know? And, huh. And you know, and I just remember I got there and they bought me a new suit or they like got a new suit for me. And everyone was like, whoa, that must mean they're really excited that you're here because you got a new suit, not one of these suits. And it's like, you know, like a rack of dusty suits down in the basement. But I'm not kidding. I had a ball doing it. It's such an amazingly crafted story. that is just so rich, and like you could just dig into so many delicious things in it.
Oh yeah, that's great. Okay, wait. Finian's Rainbow.
We touched on it earlier. It was that it was that score. It was also such a wonderful company of people. I had such a good time with that company. I was on the same floor as Chuck Cooper, and I just remember I had two kids at that point, and I was like, oh man, I was like, they were both going through it. Like Emmett was a baby and was like, you know, not sleeping and crying, and Charlie was going through stuff. And I was like, oh, Chuck, this is so hard. And Chuck had two older kids, and he's like, don't worry, man, it gets different. Just remember him saying that thing.
And that was that you got Tony nominated for that one, right?
I did. Yeah. And it closed also. You know, it closed, I think, in February or January.
I think it was that year that a lot of things closed.
Yeah, because it was 2008, 2009, right, kind of following the whole shutdown, the whole, you guys were younger then, but.
I remember it happening,
during the recession and then everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you expect to get a Tony nomination for Finian's Rainbow? Like, were you winning any precursors, or like, cause it had closed, and then were you kind of like on Tony morning, like, oh, maybe it'll happen?
I think I was completely not even remotely understanding of anything at that point. The show had closed, and I just was like completely, and then I got nominated for a drama desk, and we went to the drama desks, and I remember sitting there with my wife, and we were like, just being silly and just chatting. And then she was just like, you know, you might win. Do you have something to say? And I was like, I'm not going to win. Like, come on. I'm not going to win. I don't care. Like, no. And then suddenly they were like, Christopher Cheryl. And I was like, oh God, I got to. And it was that moment of like, I'm speaking in front of people. This feels so scary. But yes, it was. I had no idea. It was lovely.
Okay. And then Waitress.
Wow. Well, the first thing I think about when I think about Waitress is my friend Nick Cordero, who is my dressing roommate. And I miss him so much. He passed away during the early part of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And a great story there was I had done a few readings of it, but I had never put it on its feet. And so we got into rehearsal, and it was kind of a new cast. And I knew Drew really well, and we were hitting it off, but like, I didn't know anyone else. And I just was kind of like, oh, just kind of touching through. And I did my number for the first time and just like worked through it and came off. And sat down next to Nick, and he was just like, man, that shit's amazing. He was like, you're going to win a Tony for that. And I was like, thanks, man. And then we just became really good pals. Not because of that, but it was just like, he just extended himself in that moment because I was so vulnerable. I didn't know if it was, oh, by the way, I'm not telling the story right. So I did the number in the room and nobody laughed. Like, it was dead silent. So when I sat down, I was like, what's happening? This is like dead. This is not going to work.
Yeah.
He leaned over and was like, dude, that shit's amazing. Don't worry about it.
This was I Love You Like a Table.
No, this was I Will Never Let You Let Me Leave. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. You're right. Okay. Yeah.
Whatever the name.
The titles that Sarah gave these songs are hilarious.
You're Never Getting Rid of Me?
Never Getting Rid of Me. That's it. Sorry. How about that? I don't even know the name of the song.
Well, Nick was right. That was a tour de force number. You always had me in stitches the half dozen times I saw it. And you should have won a Tony for that, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It was that was the Hamilton year. That's when that was. And so that was so exciting, though. I have to say, like, being in a show during a time when Hamilton came on the scene was also just really exciting, because again, that's what I'm hoping this season coming up is like. It just, there was so much life in New York and life in the Broadway community. And it was like we were hitting some kind of zeitgeist where the rest of the country, the rest of the world was talking about what we do because it had such an impact. That's what Lynn did. And so that was just really exciting.
That's such a good point.
Wow. Okay. All of a sudden you're talking about Lynn. I'm like, why have you not been King George in the Hamilton yet?
I don't know. I think I've just been, the stars haven't aligned.
They will.
All right. I've done it like in my bedroom many times.
I'm sure it's amazing.
Not in a kinky way. No.
No.
That's not what I'm saying.
Just when you're getting dressed and like looking in the mirror and stuff. And
you'll
being goofy.
Be back.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like for myself. Yeah.
Of course. Now, what can we expect from Spamalot? I know that we're wrapping up here, but I'm just curious what audiences are in store for.
So I haven't even really started yet. They did it out of town in DC, but from what I gather from we have like a photo session, like a photo shoot where we all put costumes on. And it was just one of those like experiences where we already were just leapt right into this kind of energy, or I felt like I joined their energy, which was so, they're just riffing on each other. Everyone's like so jazzed up to do it and had such a ball, I think, doing it in DC. And so it's just like, it's an incredible group of people that are so, they're just so like poised to just go for it. And I'm really excited. I mean, I'm just really excited. I don't really know what to expect other than just diving right in and just seeing what's there and playing with everybody.
Yeah. And you've got an amazing role. It's going to be so phenomenal. We are wrapping up. We got to let you go, but we do like to end with a dose of drama. Connor, can you really quickly tee that up?
Yeah. You know, a dose of drama is just that something that's on your mind. The drama that you've been consuming, thinking about, want to rant about, rave about. And I am feeling dramatic about something. I did binge an entire season of Love Island in like 4 days, which was 50 episodes, which is too many episodes to watch in 4 days. But I was recovering from COVID at the time.
You were stricken
I'm
down.
I'm feeling dramatic because it felt like one of those watershed reality TV seasons that you only get every couple years. You know, season 3 of Love Island UK. And I feel like I'll never forget those people and the experiences we shared in the villa and the love we shared. I'm feeling
love it.
I'm feeling moody about it, that it's over, but I can always revisit it anytime.
That's the beauty of it.
Thank you for encouraging me to watch, Dylan. All right. Do you have a dose of drama, Dylan?
Yes. My dose of drama is I have finally caved and watched Peaky Blinders. I'm really enjoying it. And the writing is absolutely phenomenal. And Cillian Murphy is phenomenal. Chris, do you have a dose of drama for us today?
Okay. I saw the other night, somehow like my wife read about it and then we had to watch an episode. It was called Naked
Attraction.
Naked Attraction.
I just read about it today.
It was so intense. It's like, it's just taking reality television to its final, either like nirvana or total death knell. Like, it's basically a dating show where someone comes out and naked bodies are revealed, like five naked people are slowly revealed. And then that person just gets to objectify them and then be like, I like their butt, or I like their crotch, or I like whatever. And then they finally see their faces, and then they one at a time pick them off. They're just standing there naked.
And it's men and women, right?
It's men and women. And then that person who gets to pick gets down to two people, and then they have to take their clothes off. And then they come out naked, and then they're all looking at each other naked, and then they kind of finally pick the final person. It was so intense. My neck was so like hot and red, just thinking about it. And then I was on the subway today and I was looking around. I was like, everyone, because then they put on clothes later and you're like, oh my God, it's so much better when they just have clothes on. It's more relaxed. Everyone's just like calmer. But it was like, everyone's naked under their clothes and everyone looks so crazy.
You're hysterical. You know, Matt Doyle came on our show a couple of weeks ago and he also plugged that show. So there's something in the water with you company. Revival Kids that
I'm not plugging that show at all. No, I'm not saying, I'm just saying that was a drama for me.
That is okay. Drama. Oh, yes.
That is
it
drama.
It was real drama.
Well, Chris, you're a delight. This was so much fun.
Oh my gosh, you guys are a delight. I just love talking about all this stuff. And I it's fun to talk with people who also really love it, you know.
We totally do.
Now everyone will be able to see you in Spamalot, and I'm sure you'll be doing so many more things over the years, but they should follow along. You're at Kiffer Fitz on Twitter and at the Christopher Fitzgerald on Instagram.
Yeah. Don't follow me on stupid Twitter.
Okay. On X. We're focusing on Instagram these days. And Connor and I are at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Thank you again for joining us today, Chris.
All right. It's really nice to see you guys. And all I'm doing is waiting for the moment.
It's okay, coming.
Well,
it's
listen,
coming.
Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.
You're never going to do it again without being self-aware now. You're always going to be like, are we in sync? Are we harmonizing? Like, I don't know what we're doing.